Thank you, everyone, for listening to Soul Talk with host Jeremy McDonald, the author of Peace Be Still. You can check out more about our shows or about Jeremy at soultalkradio.org and jeremymcdonald.net. And now for our show.
Hello, and everybody, thank you for listening to Soul Talk. Tonight we have a great show. I'm very proud to bring my friend Tina Michelle on the show tonight. She's an angel psychic medium. I'm very high energy, just a dynamic personality, and I know everybody's just going to enjoy hearing what she has to say tonight. We're going to spend the first part of the show talking a little about Tina's journey, just like we always do on Soul Talk, and then talk a little bit about a project she's working on that I'm a part of as well. So I'm pretty excited about the things to come. Welcome to the show, Tina. How are you doing this evening?
Thank you, Jeremy, and thank you for having me on. I'm doing very well this evening, and very excited to talk to your listeners.
Yeah, it's going to be a great hour, and I know everybody's just going to enjoy hearing what you have to say here. For everybody that wants to call in and speak to Tina, the guest call-in number is 646-929-1371. I think probably what we'll talk about is to start off with, I know. If we just kind of dived into your bio here, you have an interesting beginning. At the age of five, you had a near drowning experience in your family pool. You could see what you would refer to as sparkling people. And I've heard light people before, but never had everybody say sparkling people, which is very interesting. Can you talk about that experience?
It is as clear to me today as when it happened, and that was a long time ago, and we won't say how many years ago that was, but it was quite some time. And I lived in West Virginia, in the very backwoods part of West Virginia, and we had what we call the pool. Now, later in life, as I look at the pictures of the pool, I understand it was actually a basement, footers and a basement that had been poured for a home, a foundation of a home that just was filled with water, and we went swimming in it. So, I was 5 years old, and everybody was there, lots of family, lots of friends of my parents, and everybody was having a good time, and I was in the pool by myself with my inflatable life ring of death, that we call it, because as we all know how unsafe they are, never use them as a life-saving device. We've learned that over the decades. But when I put up my arms, as I decided to do, woo, look at me! I went straight down, and went to the bottom of the pool. And as I was going down, I was sucking in water, and panicking. And I remember at the bottom of the pool is something shoved me back up, and the next thing I know, I was laying on my back on the concrete, on the patio, and I guess somebody had pushed the water out of my lungs with the pushing on the chest type of deal. And when I opened my eyes, I saw sparklers around everybody, and kind of like when you get actual, chlorine in your eyes, but it's still there to this day. It's been there since that very day, and that's when I started calling them the sparkly people because, the human beings would walk away and these sparkling beings would still be hovering over me and moving around me, and as life went on a little later, probably within a year, maybe 2 years, they would play with me. I was very isolated. I didn't have a lot of childhood friends, and so these beings would play with me. We would have conversations in my head. It would always be in my own voice. And so a lot of people, of course, thought she has an invisible friend. I had several hundred invisible friends, actually. But, Jeremy, one of the things that I now understand what was going on. My mother hit a couple of these yard sales back in the day, and she bought all these little people. Back when you were my age, we used to have the little wooden people, and she bought the farm and the house and the school and the merry-go-round, and it was a whole village type of thing. And I used to set them all up. It would take me all day. I would set all this up in a circle, and I would sit in the middle. And I would play that the little postman, he would be taking a letter over here to this woman to tell her that, you know, her husband had died, and she would cry, and she'd run over to the pigs and talk to the pigs about it. And only with hindsight do I now realize I was being taught how interconnection works, how everyone is connected to everyone else. I see that now at, you know, 50-some years old, but I didn't see it, of course, as a kid. All I know is the sparkly people and me sat and played little people for hours. And they'd say, isn't she doing so good? She plays all by herself all the time. She just entertains herself. I had an entire garage full of people playing with me. We had all kinds of fun. You know, I wasn't by myself at all. And then the time come that I was 9 years old, and there was an epidemic, actually, of rheumatic fever in Charleston, West Virginia at that time. And all the hospitals were just packed. They were full. And my mother took me to the doctor, and he diagnosed me with rheumatic fever. And he says, you know, do the best you can. Take her home. Do the best you can. So my mom sat by my bed for 9 days. And my temperature, she said, was 104 for 9 days. And I would, you know, drift in and out, and I'd wake up, and she'd be there, and she'd be giving me some soup or, you know, trying to wipe me down to keep the fever down. And then one time I woke up, and she wasn't there. And I looked at the bottom of the bed, and there was this man standing there in a nightgown, what I called a nightgown. And he looked just like the guy in the picture right above the bed, you know, the Garden of Gethsemane picture that my mother always had. And he come around, and he sat down beside me where my mother had been sitting most of the time. And he started talking to me. I don't know what he said to this day. I have no idea what was said. The interesting fact, well, interesting to me as a child, not now. I mean, that was pretty interesting to me then, looking back on it. But he brought all these people with him, and they were all dressed in different costumes. I called them Halloween costumes. I now understand they were tribal dress and regalia and different nations, you know, the way they dress. So they were all talking to me in all these different languages. And it just sounded like a big roar in my head. And I just remember squeezing my eyes because it was so loud. And then I don't know what happened. I don't remember anything after that. I started to get well. It took me months to get enough strength back to go even back to school. But after I started getting well, I started seeing things. And some of these things were a little frightening and a little scary. And it was usually deceased people that I was seeing. I know that now. I didn't as a kid. I thought I was losing my mind. And I told our family preacher a couple of times. After the fourth time, you don't tell the family preacher anymore because he started getting a little frightened. More than once, I ended up on the front pew by myself, and I'll just say that. I was in trouble at church all the time. But, you know, sometimes they don't like questions being asked. And when a 9-year-old, 10-year-old is asking certain questions and the preacher says, you know, you're being a heretic and puts you on the front pew, you stop talking about it. You keep it to yourself because obviously you're a very bad person. If the preacher is putting you on the front pew and nobody's allowed to talk to you, you're a very bad person. So I started keeping that to myself. And at the ripe old age of 17, I was married for the first time because, you know, it was West Virginia and that's what you do. My first husband was an EMT. So his grandfather had passed away in Florida, and we were driving down to Florida, and I'd never been out of the state of West Virginia my whole life. I'd never traveled anywhere. And we stopped at a hotel that had an indoor pool. I mean, I thought I'd died and went to heaven. Now, I know how to swim by now because I made sure I knew how to swim, okay? Because we would go swimming in the creek, we'd go swimming in the river, you know, I needed to know how to swim. So I knew how to swim by 17. What I didn't realize, because I'd never been into an indoor pool, is that there's different kinds of pools, and some of them are called shelf drop-offs, to where, like, it's 3 feet, it's 3 feet, it's 4 feet, it's 10 feet. And my husband and I were in the pool. His back was to me, and I was walking up the middle of the, from the 3 foot, I was just walking, and I was fussing about something. I forget. I used to be quite a sass box. I'm a redhead, so I was quite a sass, little sassy thing. And all of a sudden, my feet went out from underneath me. I took in water immediately, started to panic, went to the bottom of the pool. Dead again. my husband resuscitated me, and we went on to the funeral, but, I mean, it changed something in me at that point in time. At that point in time, I started to be able to, like, know things, just new things all over my body. I would know when somebody had, like, ill will towards me or thought about harming me in some way, or, you know, I was just on, like, super hyper alert is what I thought it was. Now, being who I am now, I can clearly look back and say, you know, your clairvoyance and clairsentience, claircognizance was coming. I think I said that wrong, but you know what I'm saying. It came all the way to the surface. It came really close to the surface. So that marriage didn't last long. But later in life, I married again and had my second daughter. I had a first child from that first marriage. And my second daughter, I was in labor. I had just gotten out of the hospital that morning with pneumonia, so they couldn't put me to sleep. They had to do a spinal block. And my daughter, don't cringe, okay, I know you men sometimes cringe. Let's just say she turned sideways. She wanted to come out sideways, not even breech, sideways. And so I was dying, and they rushed me to surgery. And because they couldn't put me to sleep, they gave me the spinal block and had to do a C-section with a spinal block. And that would have been really good, with the exception of they left me right before they started surgery. They had to run to the ER because a pregnant woman had been in a wreck, and they went to help, came back, started my surgery. Halfway through surgery, my anesthesia wore off. And that is, And the anesthesiologist above me, I was looking at his face, and I remember just going, I couldn't even breathe, it hurt so bad. And his face turned into the face of my husband, and I remember saying to him, honey, I think I'm dying. Take care of the babies, take care of the children. I love you, yada, yada. Then his face suddenly turned into my mother's face, and I told her, very similar things and private things. And then it turned into my oldest daughter's face, and then friends and other relatives. And then the next thing that I know, I'm seeing in front of my eyes this big, just alive red kind of cloud door, for lack of a better word. It was like a big red cloud, but it was like a poof of smoke. And I remember seeing my hand reach out and touching that. Now, only later did I realize I was in a spinal block. My hand didn't go anywhere. But I saw my hand reach out and touch it. And as my hand tried to touch it, it kind of went through it like smoke. And I heard this whoosh sound. And then it was replaced by orange. And it was the color of orange, a burnt orange. It was like alive. It was living and moving and a living thing. And I put my hand out again, and it went whoosh. And then yellow, whoosh, 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 whoosh. And then the next thing I know, it was a pop, like a champagne cork, like pop. And then I heard absolute silence. We have never heard absolute silence on Earth, even in deprivation chambers. You can't hear absolute silence because you can be so quiet. You can actually, it's like hearing your blood in your veins. You can never hear absolute silence. And I did. And I'll never forget it. It was so wonderful. So wonderful to be still. And it just, you know, the most wonderful feeling came over me. Just absolutely, I just felt so warm and loved and wonderful. And I remember I turned and I looked down and I saw my body on the operating table. I saw blood everywhere. I couldn't understand what they were saying because they sounded like Charlie Brown's teacher, you know, wah, 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 when they were talking. And I remember looking down and I went, oh, that is so gross. That is gross. So I know you take your slang and your little sayings with you to the other side because I'm like, that is so gross. And I thought, I'm out of here. And I turned around, and when I did, I was in this white, almost like warm yogurt. It wasn't milk. It was thicker than milk, but it was like a warm yogurt, and it just felt so good, all white. And I remember thinking, I'm out of here. And I turned around, and the next thing I know, I was screaming my oldest daughter's name. I thought I was screaming out loud. Now, my husband and mother, who was in recovery with me later, told me that I whispered her name. But to me, I was screaming it. And that told me why I came back, and which is proven to be true. And that's not my story to tell. That's my daughter's. But it's proven to be true that I really did have to come back for her. So after that, Then the clairaudience started. And so now I've had this experience with seeing these doors. I've been dead several times now. I've got this knowing. I used to say, I figured this out, and I figured that out. My husband said, you're the figuredest woman I ever met in my life. And I didn't know that I was psychic. I didn't know what that word was. I'd only heard that word a few times back as a child, and it was the way it was said as if I was a prostitute. It was not a good thing. It was said in a very venomous, dirty way. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what that is, but I don't want to be that. So I had no idea I was psychic. I just thought I figured things out and figured people out really well. So I'm feeling very despondent. And I'd felt this way for a very, very long time. And they thought, well, maybe you've got postpartum depression. It went on for 2 years. And it was not postpartum depression. I now know from being, you know, able to talk to others who's been through this that didn't go through childbirth to have this experience, that it's once you've been to the other side, there is a deep, deep sadness about not being able to stay. And for whatever reason, you know, your choice, their choice, whatever reason that you're sent back, you're sent back. And so there was a deep lingering sadness, and it got worse and worse and worse every day. In fact, my husband at one point in time said to me, he said, every day I come home, I'm like, well, she's alive. I expected you to off yourself any day. And I said, well, thanks for checking on me. Thanks for calling during the day. Appreciate it. Thanks for that. But it got so bad that I just decided I can't live with this pain in my chest anymore. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just can't live this way. And I went to the river to off myself, to take my own life. And when I went to the river, I said, I'm going to sit here and think about everything, and then I'm going to decide what to do. When I'm done thinking, I'm just going to roll off the end of this pier and go into the water. Because we had this, it wasn't a big fancy pier. I don't want to get anybody thinking it was like the marina or something. It was just a little boat pier that somebody had built that floated in the water that would allow you to not have to get your, you know, your boat real close to the riverbank in case you scraped the bottom, I reckon, or whatnot. So anyway, and I'm sitting at the edge out there, and I'm thinking things over, and, oh, I was having such a good pity party. I mean, it was really good. And the light was sparkling on the water, and it looked like diamonds everywhere, and I thought, this is a good day to die. This is the day I'm going to die today. And then all of a sudden, I heard this voice that said, so you're having a bad day, huh? And I jumped and I looked around, and there was this man standing there. And he was an African-American man, and he had dirty clothes, and he was little and skinny and had his belt, like, all the way down around to where he still had a foot long of a belt hanging down. And I'll tell you right then, the first thing I thought about is, oh, my God, I'm on this river bank alone with this man, this black man. Oh, my God, he's going to kill me. And then I thought, well, maybe that little suicide thing will work out. I did not realize I was prejudiced until that moment, but more on that in a minute. And I turned around to tell him off, like, who is this man interrupting me? I have business to do. And he sat down, crossed his legs Indian style, sat down, and he said, you want to tell me about it? And I turned around to tell him about it, all right. I was going to tell him what he could do with it and to get out of here. I was busy. And I turned around and I went, it all started the day I was born. And out of my mouth, there's no other words for it. I vomited my entire life. I mean, it just went on and on and on and on. And as you can tell, I can talk forever. And I talked and I talked, and every little wrong or slight or bad thing that happened to me, I went on and on about it. And when I was done, I was exhausted. I was empty. And I realized, I was like, wait a minute, I've got kids. I've got kids getting off of a school bus and one that needs to be picked up at nursery school. What am I doing? And I started coming back into myself, and I said, I've got to go. And he goes, okay. And I had to step by him, over him, because it was only about 3 foot wide. And he held up his hand, and I'd love to say I touched his hand and I saw God. You know, I didn't. It felt like a man's hand. And I stepped across, and, you know, little pier, the boat ramp we're on, is sloshing back and forth in the water, and you had to be careful not to fall, and I was very careful not to fall, even though I wanted to throw myself in an hour earlier. And I walked up the riverbank, one way in and one way out to this little ramp, okay? And I thought, well, he's a really nice guy. I wonder if he's going to be here tomorrow, because we don't have anybody where I live to talk to like this. And he really listened. And I turned around to say, hey, if you come back tomorrow, I'll bring some sandwiches and we'll have a picnic. And he was gone. And the first thing I thought was, oh, my God, my story was really bad. He's jumped in the water. He killed himself. And then I thought, well, he come to kill himself too. And then I heard, you've just met a guardian angel. And I heard it loud and clear in my head, in the voice. And the voice is in your own voice, but it's without emotion. It's very matter-of-fact, very, the affect is very different than your own emotional up-and-down verbiage. And I said, well, it couldn't have been. He was black. And I realized I had just said that in front of God and all of heaven. And I felt about as big as a dot on a ladybug, I'm telling you. It was bad. I felt the shame go through me, and I thought, oh, you're prejudiced. I didn't even know it. And the angel said to me, the voice, which I later identified as an angel, said to me, we pull on a body like you pull on a pair of pants. Doesn't matter what color it is, as long as it's clean. And that was how I met my first angel.
That's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
That's such a humbling experience in so many ways, because a lot of people, they may not have a similar experience. People can relate that, you know, because we've been to that edge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where we think that there's no way out, you know, or there's no, you know, it's just too much, or whatever the story, you know, whatever we're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And here this angel sat down and showed you kindness, you know, and just asked, you know, what, and helped you through that. That's pretty amazing. So
I think I had a lot of pain build up, Jeremy, and had kept so much in that it just had to be let out. And it was either going to be let out through death or an absolute purge. And it was a purge. I mean, I was exhausted for days after that. It really got rid of everything out of my cells, I really feel like I went through a whole cellular reconstruction that day. Because it's like all the pain is now out. Now we can actually use you. We can actually use you as a vessel for the universe. We can actually use you to actually help people. Because we had to remove that pain out of you to get to the to clean you up so that you're usable.
Well, and have you found too that the way spirit does it? Like, have you ever thought back, and have you asked the question? And I know I've asked this question before: why me? And then you know, your ego, of course, asks that question. And then I realized that the ones that go through the toughest lessons, the ones where you almost feel like, oh, good Lord, is this going to stop? The ones that go through those lessons are the ones that really have a strong understanding. They can take it forward, and I see it in a lot of people, you know, and I see them going through struggles, almost to the point of it's something that a human being, I don't even know how they handle it, but they're the ones mm-hmm. that take the strength and get stronger through that, and then they go and they become this great light onto the world. I think, you know, you and I were talking earlier this afternoon, and I was telling you about the young people I've worked with, because I work with a lot mm-hmm. of younger people. And I watch them mm-hmm. just go through nightmares, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then they've become, a lot of them become these great lights, and that's what, you know, you've done. You've taken a lot of pain and turned it into a light, so that's pretty incredible.
Well, I think a lot of this is, my personal belief is, it was all signed up for before I ever come. And I honestly... where I teach classes, I tell my students, I say, you know, you will rarely get anyone sitting at your table or comes to you for healing work that you have not walked in the same shoes as they have. Because like does attract like. And as you go through something, the universe wants to see, well, how did you figure it out? Did that work for you? No? You wish you'd have done this? Well, then when so-and-so comes to you, you tell them about that. Tell them to go that way, not the way you went. So I really feel like there's a whole lot of that going on. And, yes, I have asked, why me? And the answer was simple, why not? And I'm like, okay, then. Too chay, putty cat. So,
that's exactly what I say.
Have they said that to you, too?
Why not?
Yeah.
Well,
why me? Why not?
Experience. Just a real quick story. I was on the beach probably like 8 years ago. And it was a full moon out, and I decided to start screaming at God and saying, you wanted me to do all this work, but you're not helping me. And then I heard the response back that, well, I've shown you all the signs. You're just not looking. You're just
mm-hmm.
turning your back on all of them. And then I said, well, then why me? And I heard, well, why not you?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and so, yeah, I've heard that come to many, many, many people. Well, why not you? So,
mm-hmm.
and it's the truth. It's the truth. So,
and it's like, you know, we say, why me? It's not because, we're saying that because we feel we're special. I didn't say it because I felt special. I felt like, why am I being, you know, drugged through the gravel on the back of a car. What's going on here? You know, why? Why not you? And they explain something to me when I start talking to people, especially people who are new to a metaphysical thought, and that is that we do choose our lives. And when I sit down and talk to people about that, and they say, there's no way I would have chosen this, the angels kind of give me something, and I'd like to share it with you. And it's called Neanderthal Man becomes thawed out. We thaw him out. We bring him back to life. And we set him down in the middle of Disney World or Universal Studios or King's Island or any of the other awesome theme parks, ones with lots of roller coasters. And we have, in Cincinnati, we have a new roller coaster called the Banshee, aptly named, by the way. And if we thawed out Neanderthal Man and put him there, and he saw us running over top of each other, pushing each other out of the way, to stand in line for 2 hours, to ride a 32-second ride that knocks you back and forth. And during the ride, I have you know, you're not thinking, oh, isn't this a delightful time, Reginald? Why, yes, purpose is wonderful. You know, you're not talking like that. You're thinking, you know what, I just heard somebody got killed on one of these not too long ago. What am I doing? What if my neck snaps? Will anybody notice? What if this ride breaks and I'm hanging upside down like a bat? What then? These are the thoughts that go through your mind. And because you're in fight or flight mode, and that's, you know, that's thrilling for us, but if you look at prehistoric man, he's not going to be looking at you like, well, yes, I completely concur. I completely understand why you're doing this. He's going to think, you're crazy. I would never choose to do that. But yet we do. Because we're advanced. We're advanced in years from him. We're advanced, we have evolutionary advances from him. So we can say, well, why wouldn't we? This is a lot of fun. Now, if you take the banshee and you change its name to, say, addiction, and you take the roller coaster of your choice, just think of one, and we change its name to betrayal. And another one over here that's yet even a scarier ride, and we call that isolation. And if we rename these and we see we as souls don't just stand in line, we get off the ride and run to get back in line. Because what lasts here on Earth 32 seconds for a ride, if you pull that out over 85 years, yeah, it may be scary while you're on it, but the minute you get off of it, you cannot wait to tell your friends in heaven, oh, my God, you can't believe I rode the addiction ride, and I was isolated, and then I was betrayed. It was awesome. I can't wait to go back. And although it doesn't make sense to us living it, liken that to the 32 seconds you're on that ride.
Well, and along with that, too, because when you're on the ride, you're like, I'm never going to do this again.
Exactly. Exactly.
Then you go and you get back on it again.
Now, I have one question for you. Have you ever seen a line at the merry-go-round?
Yeah, no, unless it's the mom and dad with their kids.
And then it's no more than a 10-minute wait. It's definitely not 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, because I live in Florida, I've stood in lines for roller coasters many, many times, and I think I know the theme park in Cincinnati that you're talking about.
But there's never a real big line at the merry-go-round. Nobody wants the merry-go-round ride unless they're babies, right?
Right. No. No, and that's why I always tell people life down here is an adventure.
Yeah.
I call it Disney World metaphysics down here, but, you know, because it's...
That's pretty right on.
Yeah. So, it's fun stuff. Well, sometimes we're in that big drop in the roller coaster. You're like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I know what's going to happen.
You're like, I did not plan for this.
Yeah.
Throw your hands in the air like you just don't care, Jeremy. That's the whole thing.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, yeah. And there's a... all kinds, and that's the thing is there's all kinds of stimulus going on around us at all times, and we can choose how we're going to experience that stimulus. And so if we're down here on an adventure, because I know that we go back and we're like, that was the coolest thing I ever experienced. I just went through the addiction game because my. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a medium, I've talked to I don't know how many spirits, but then my mother being one of the strongest spirits I've talked to, at least closest to me, and she said, she's constantly saying, Jeremy, and I'm like, what? She goes, remember, it's an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And then she giggles. She laughs. Her spirit laughs.
I mean, one day...
Go on. Oh, I would say, because she realizes in this, when she was in this lifetime, she was caught up with all of her addictions. And now when she's over there, she's like, yeah, that, I know what I was doing. She goes, I just did the addiction game, and it was fun.
Well, here, you know, it's like one day you're going to just wait for the holodeck to be turned off, and you're going to be standing in an empty room. You know what I mean? It's like it's all been pretend. Everybody that played these roles in your life were all pretend in the end. It is an illusion.
Yeah.
It's a holodeck. Yep. Star Trek fan, sorry.
Yeah.
Do you know what the holodeck
I'm
is? Okay, good, because I was like...
I was a Star Trek fan for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. The holodeck,
so,
that's what we're living.
We are. We are really living in a holodeck. So let's talk about our project, well, your project that I'm a part of, the Festival of Angels coming up here in Orlando, speaking of roller coasters.
Right.
Because there is a bunch here.
The Festival of Angels is being produced and hosted by the International Society of Angels. And what the International Society of Angels is, it's like an one-stop shop for resources of all things angelic. It's an angelic connection resource. So this, the ISA, International Society of Angels, wanted to begin by branching out and introducing angel people and like-minded people that deal in the angelic realm and with angelic things and angelic, all things angelic, whether it be Christmas tree ornaments right down to I talk to angels, anything in between. They wanted a warehouse, if you were, like a clearinghouse of all these people that could come together. And the shows is how one of the venues they're going to be using to do that. And it's called the Festival of Angels, and it's going to be on Labor Day weekend, August 29th through the 31st, 2014, in Orlando at the Buena Vista Palace Resort, which is right outside of Walt Disney World. And it's going to be fantastic. There's so much to tell you about it. But these ladies are putting it on. I am helping them with promotions. I'm directing their promotions. And I got to say, I'm very, very excited about really starting to release that out. And we'll be on radio, we'll be on television, we're going to be advertising in a lot of different directions. And we also have blog radio broadcasts on our website, which is www.thefestivalofangels.com. And we'd love to have people to visit us there and learn more. We have so many great things. We've got free yoga every morning for anybody that would like to come from 7 a.m. to 8. We'll have yoga all together as a group. We have Friday night, we have a New Age concert with Unita. She's an award-winning etheric artist. She sounds very much like a cross between Enya and Sarah Brightman. I mean, she's just awesome. Victoria Schultz, who is a harpist who toured with Celtic Woman. Several other bands and New Age performers will all be there. It's going to be an entire concert, and it's all free. We're open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And on Friday, admission is free all day. So if you think, oh, I don't know if I want to, you know, I can't afford to go or whatnot, come and at least check it out on Friday. It's free admission. This is our gift back to our community and our gift back to Orlando, to where, you know, come and check it out and see if you like it or not. On Saturday, we'll have a live radio broadcast. FM 101.9 will be there, and they're going to be broadcasting live from the show. There's also going to be strolling angels, and it's actually people dressed as angels that will be available for photo opportunities, so bring your phones or your cameras. We don't take the pictures, but we don't mind if you do, and it'll be free of charge. And with some very beautiful wings that have been made by a costume designer that I believe is in a costume designer of several movie props for angels. And on Sunday, Art Gutkin will be giving a group past life regression. And that's free. All you have to do is pay your admission, the expo admission, and all the workshops are free. And we expect a huge turnout for that. He's been trained. He went to the Michael Newton school for Michael Newton wrote Journey of Souls, Destiny of Souls. As I'm saying Michael Newton, I'm getting a click in the back of my head. Is that his name? Am I correct? I think it is. I hope I'm not making a mistake. His last name's Newton.
Last,
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. And what he did was he was doing past life regressions and took someone so far back, they actually talked about their life between lives. So he's trained in that. And he has tons and tons and tons of certificates of hypnosis there, certificates and certifications. He's a forensic, hypnotherapist as well. So he deals with crime victims and things like that too. So it's very exciting, and that's all free. All of our workshops are free with admission. I'm giving two workshops. I'm telling my story, like I just started to shared a little bit of my story with you. That'll be on Saturday, and it's called Returned to Sender, My Near-Death Experiences. And then on Sunday, I'm giving the Are You Psychic workshop, and I have developed a test to see not only are you psychic, how psychic are you, and in what areas, where do your true gifts lie, whatever. So anyway, I need to bring my grammar angel in here and start working with me because I'm correcting myself constantly. But so it's very exciting. Admission is $12, but there's lots and lots of ways you can get in for even less. Again, free all day Friday. Saturday and Sunday, if you wish to bring a canned good that we're giving to various food banks, bring a canned good, you can get $2 off. If you have AARP, you can get $2 off. If you'd like to bring a pet supply, litter, cat food, dog blankets, anything like that, because we have several charities, one of which is Pet Rescues by Judy. We'll be giving her those donations. You also get $2 off. And last but not least, we're taking up toys that, new unwrapped toys for BACE, which is an organization that collects toys to give to children with cancer. So there's lots of ways you can get discounts. Yeah. And we're really wanting to spread light and to show, there's lots and lots and lots of angels here on Earth. It doesn't mean that we think we're actual angels. It means we can act out in our very, very best with our human wings and be an extension of the universe and operate from compassion and kindness.
Right. Beautiful. And that actually, for those that are listening, I think you already give the website, but it's thefestivalofangels.com, so you can check out more about that. And there's a couple of things I just want to add on to here. I think you actually covered it. The one thing I was going to mention, you actually talked about. So never mind, I don't have to say. Oh, I think, is it true that if they get the admission ticket, they get discounts into Disney afterwards? Did I hear it? Did I read that?
That's the thing. They're, you don't even have to pre-purchase tickets. We've changed that to where if you go to our website, on the very front page, there should be a link that will take you into discounted tickets, including half-day tickets. And I think that's pretty rare from what I understand. And, buy you a discounted Disney ticket, stop by and see us. Make sure you come by. We're going to have the Strolling Angels, Victoria Schultz, the harpist, is going to be playing. I mean, it's going to be just beautiful. All of the booths should be full of things to purchase, things to look at, things to touch, smell, taste. We've got food demonstrations. We've got all kinds of different things that's going to be happening. And it's just like a really unique, all together, under one roof, angel work.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, it sounds amazing. I'm looking forward to it and being there.
And what's your workshop and when? Do you know?
I think mine's 1 o'clock on Sunday, and mine's called Cosmic Shamanism.
Interesting.
It's a process that I've come up with, that I got from my angels and my mother and friends. we're a lot more than we think we are. And
absolutely.
I dive into ourselves and we'll discover a whole other world.
Well, we do want to tell people, on our website, if you go to our presenters, everyone who's presenting a workshop is listed there. And not just listed, but if you go there, you're going to find, number one, their website. You'll find the title of their workshop, when the workshop's going to be, some information about the workshop, but also some bios. So because we have three ongoing workshops at all times, there's three choices to be made every hour. So somebody can really kind of go down through there and make their list out of what they want to see. And there's actually a speaker's list that should be coming up this week to where you can just download the whole speaker's list, take it with you, and be able to pick and choose who you'd like to go and see. And I certainly hope some of your listeners can come and visit with me and let me know they heard it on the show. I would like that. I'd like to meet them.
You know, it's fun. It's interesting. I'm really excited because you actually already have a few of my friends here. Emily Andrew is a friend of mine. She's an angel medium, and she's one of the speakers. And then, then my friend Cynthia Higgins, Dr. Higgins, is going to be there, and she's an angel medium. And here's what's extraordinary about her. She and I were just at a fair yesterday and talked for 2 hours. She's a psychiatrist on top of being a medium. And has quite the extraordinary story as well herself. So there's a lot of gifted speakers that are going to be here that I actually personally know.
It's pretty high powered. And I will share with your listeners. I've had so many people that, you know, that have come up in past shows that I've done and asked, you know, well, is this person going to be there or that person? And this may be someone who is extremely well-known or someone who has, you know, their own television show or whatever. And, you know, I actually wrote an entire blog entry on just because someone isn't the most popular doesn't always mean best. And it certainly doesn't always mean best for you because just like there's, you know, 10,000 pediatricians, not all 10,000 pediatricians practice alike. It's not just can they diagnose, but it's also what's their bedside manner like? How accessible are they? How much do they teach? Well, instead of just saying yes or no, they'll say yes and this is why, or no, then this is why. You know, how much extra help do they provide? So I know that we've had, when they go, they're going to see a whole lot of angel workshops, and it is the Festival of Angels, okay? But, and many times it'll say, you know, learn how to talk to angels, learn how to talk to angels, learn how to talk to angels. But all of these teachers teach differently, just like all the different pediatricians practice medicine differently. And what you may go to one and say, oh, I really click with this person, I did A, B, and C like they said, and I could do it. Of course, you may go to the other one and say, you know, I just didn't click. I didn't get anything like that. But you have to keep looking for the right teacher, mentor, practitioner, reader, whatever the case is. You have to find the right one for you. And so each one of our people that we have speaking all have a unique, extraordinary gift, story, and an offering for their participants that want to come in and be a part of the show.
Yeah, and you can feel the energy off the show. It's going to be quite a wonderful show. So, you know, and you bring up a really good point, actually, Tina, that I'd like to touch on really quickly, is that, you know, you talk quite a bit about it here, is that a lot of times people look at the people that write the books and are famous or have radio shows, that kind of stuff, and then they get they think that that person is just the most, they're it, you know, they've arrived or whatnot. And those people they're running through their blocks just like we are, you know. And I actually had a really interesting story because when I was on tour with my particular book, because I have a radio show and all that kind of stuff, somebody, you know, wanted to talk to me, and they hadn't messaged me for months. They didn't message me, and one day something hit me where I saw them. And I messaged them, you know, and I just messaged them on Facebook. Hey, I just want to introduce myself. My name is Jeremy. And they actually said, I've always wanted to talk to you, but I always thought you were too busy. And I thought to myself, well, I am busy, but aren't we all on some level busy? We have children. We have, you know, we have soccer practice. You know, we have jobs. And, you know, we have things going on in our lives. All of us have things that are going on in our lives that make us busy. just because one person is writing a book doesn't make them any more important than another person. So it's and a lot of times the greatest teacher is the one that is the simplest.
Mm-hmm. Well, can I share with you? I do want to share something. I've been on several different television shows, Scariest Places on Earth, Beyond Chance with Melissa Etheridge, The Unexplained, The Crystal Ball, and then I did Mexico City, the whole tour there, and I was on Lotus there, and I was asked to be there with James Van Prague. Myself and one other psychic medium was asked to do this conference with him. And under his, you know, he chose the two people that he wanted to work with. So that's all well and good. But here's the thing. Not one television, no, I take that back. There was one. Most television shows that I worked on never even tested me. They went through a list of psychics, and I was the first one that answered the phone. That's what I was told. So when you see someone on some of these shows, and I'm not going to even clarify what they are, but just some of these shows, don't assume they must really be good or they wouldn't have gotten this. Maybe they just answered the phone that day. So, I mean, it's that simple. It's that simple. You know, we believe what we're told, and television says, oh, this person must be good. We've given them a show. This person must be good. We've given them this, or they're appearing as our expert here. You know, they can, if you're 50 miles out of town and carry a briefcase, you can be an expert, you know. So don't ever just assume that just because somebody's got this or got that, or, I mean, anybody can write a book. It doesn't mean it's good, and it certainly doesn't mean it's true. So it takes more than just like, oh, they've got a radio show. You can have a radio show and not be any good at it. It doesn't necessarily mean that you've arrived. You're right on that. And it doesn't mean that you're walking your talk. It doesn't mean that you know what you're talking about. I've had actually people that have been, that I personally know that's been reading less than 2 years. Reading people less than 2 years. And now have themselves listed as teachers.
Oh,
how is that possible? Because in the limited amount of readings they would do with family and friends over the 2 year period, and you're a reader, you understand what I'm saying, Jeremy. There's no way you are ready to bring on, because you will never learn faster than when you say, "Let me teach."
Yes.
When you say to the universe, "Let me teach," I'm going to be a teacher. You will get it thrown at you 15 ways to Sunday, I'm telling you. You will be the student first and the teacher last.
Years ago, I wanted to be ordained. I wanted to be ordained. My teacher was like, you're not ready. And I went behind her back and did it on my own. And so, of course, I was deceptive because I didn't tell her about it for months. And then I told her, and all these lessons started coming to me. And she said, "Well, the universe is going to start preparing you." She wasn't mad. She wasn't upset. She said,
"No,
the universe is going to start preparing you." And I was humbled more than once.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, oh yes. They'll drag your lower lip up over your head and say, "Okay, teach this. How do you get out of your lower lip being over your head? Do it." So, I mean, you have to laugh because you just paint yourself into these corners. Our ego allows us just to paint, and then we're in a corner going, "Yeah, so listen, if I could just get a little help getting out of this corner." So, you know, God loves us in our craziness, doesn't he? He, she, whatever. God loves us in our craziness. Because if you weren't crazy, you wouldn't have picked this journey, this ride. So,
yeah, definitely true.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty, it's I think it's extraordinary, you know, because now when I look back in retrospect of all the stuff that I've done, and I know you can relate to this, and you go, oh, you're like, well, I don't want to do that again, but it was a ride.
Mm-hmm.
And so in your life, and so I see people that I work with, and I see these stages. I call it stages of awakening, and they're awakening to themselves. And I have one friend that's going through the stage where he's finally gotten his voice. Now it's coming out, and it's almost like it's not coming. It's almost rough, you know, to where you know, people are starting to get that. I'm like, well, he hasn't gotten to that level where his compassion is kicking in, where he understands, like, I need to speak my truth. But and I say to people, you have to go through the stages in order to grow, you know, until you finally, because that's how we learn down here. We do things, we experience, we do things, we process, you know. And so it's pretty, you know, that's the whole nature of what we're doing. It's growing and experiencing.
Well, I think there's three things, and I teach people that eventually will be future teachers. And there's and reading is a part of that. I teach mostly readers. I don't necessarily teach the healers. There's healing teachers out there that can teach that. Because I'm not a healer. That's a secondary gift. My primary is that I'm a psychic and a medium, and I talk to angels and see them, talk to them, best friends with them. That's my buds. It's my posse. Anyway. But one of the three things that I teach three things, and one is accuracy and truth, okay? You need to be accurate as a reader, and you need to be truthful as a reader. But that's not all, because if you're just that, that's not enough. Your delivery, part two is the delivery, how you deliver this information. Some people need it very, you know, raw and, you know, very quote-unquote real. Some people need a softer approach, a more velvet glove. It's knowing what the personality of your client needs and how to do it. And the third is tools. And if you've not used different tools and tried different tools, which books do you recommend? You know, I recommend books that I read 10, 15 years ago, and I only read them because I was in a space in my life where I needed that information. Do you know what I mean? It's like Codependent No More. I recommend that book probably a million. I bet I've sold a million copies myself. It's not even my book. But it's such a good book that, and I read it when I needed it in my life. So if I had not walked through that, like you say, why me, why not? If I had not walked through that to where I needed to find some help to break out of a codependent pattern, I would not have known that to be a tool to provide to other people. So for the people out there who are just now studying metaphysics, you know, and have went to a weekend workshop and got their certificate and, you know, your stamp, now you are psychic, there you go. Yesterday I could not spell psychic, today I are one. You know, you have to be able to have, because you're going to get stuff, that's okay, you're going to get stuff thrown at you that you're going to need accuracy and truth, delivery, and tools. And you better have these all three things in place, because the strongest structure on the face of the earth is the pyramid. It's the strongest structure, the three sides. You need three parts to hold, to be strong enough to withstand helping your client change their paradigm. Notice I said helping, not doing it for them. Helping your client change their paradigm. And you need the strength that they can rely on to help them do that. And so be careful not to jump out too quick. And I'm talking to the listeners. Be careful not to jump out there too quickly and thinking, I must go do this. Is this a burning desire in my heart? Because it is a huge gift, pleasure, and responsibility to sit down one-on-one with someone and to assist them in shifting their paradigm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we are actually, believe it or not, down to our last minute. Before we get done here, I want to let everybody know more about Tina Michelle. Definitely look up www.tinamichelle.com. Also check out www.thefestivalofangels.com. If you look down in the notes of this show, there is her contact information. and you can definitely reach out to her. She does take appointments, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And, and so definitely reach out to her. I'm sorry we weren't able to take callers on this show. I know there was we had about 20 callers holding, and I apologize. We just got through a lot of information. But Tina will be coming back on the show later. And
I will.
Thank you so much, Tina. I really appreciate it coming on.
Thank
and,
you.
And I look forward to seeing you in a few weeks.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.